Hello and welcome to the Untitled Female Driven Podcast. Woo. I got it right this time. We are three film and TV writers. We're here to talk to you guys about how to make it as professional writers in the entertainment industry. Our podcast covers what we wish we'd known when we were getting started so we wouldn't make some of the same mistakes that we've made. You guys will make no mistakes thanks to us.
Absolutely.
You can learn the easy way what we learned the hard way, so you're welcome. So today we're going to talk about how to break into this writer's room. How do we get our first jobs? We've all worked in writer's rooms, I believe, as support staff in one job or another. Erica, you go first. Maybe talk about what support staff job have you had and how did you get that job?
So I got my first writer's room job when I was still living in New York. I had just graduated from college and one of my best friends was the writer's assistant on Monk, the Tony Shalhoub show. They were, you know, on their very last season and my friend left the show and he recommended me for it. So I was basically there for the last half, the last third or so of the last season of Monk. And I specifically got that job because a friend recommended me for it.
You know what?
What?
It's a good thing we covered networking in a previous episode because, again, this is a perfect example of how who you know helps you get a job. It's pretty much 90% of probably how most people get their jobs, hearing about it from a friend. So what about you, Jess?
So I have not had a support level job.
Okay. Well, Jess, it's been nice having you on our podcast.
Good for you. Wow. Just waltzed in. Yes.
Yeah. I will say that I think that was a mistake on my part. I think if I'd had a support level job, I would not have felt so completely at sea when I did get my first staff writing job. When I got my job, I had no idea how a writer's room worked. I had no idea about the hierarchy of a room or the politics of a room, what my responsibilities were.
I got my first job in TV, pretty much was my first job in the industry. I was an intern for a little while and a post PA on a movie. And then I got a job as the assistant to the EP of a sci-fi series called Alphas. And I guess I told you guys that story already. I had worked for Zach Penn as his intern for a while, and he told me he wasn't going to hire me. And then I just kept bugging him. By bugging him, I mean I worked my ass off and showed up early and stayed late every day and proved that he should hire me because I was a hard worker. So he did hire me, and I became his assistant on the show. And even though I was sitting like outside the writer's room, I could hear everything they were talking about. So I may as well have been in the room because I got to hear everything and know what was going on. And then when the writers would break off and do like little mini rooms, a couple of writers would meet and talk about their episode. They would bring me in to take notes and I would also get to like help them. I would ghostwrite scenes and I would workshop ideas with them. So it was like kind of a crazy, like I got a lot of awesome experience very early on in my career and then went on to work in film and then went back around to TV about 2 years ago when I started as a writer's assistant on Jupiter's Legacy.
I also want to share my favorite way that I got a writer's assistant job was that I interviewed as a writer's assistant with some dude, which I, you know, I think I either applied for or someone recommended me for it. And I did not get that job. This guy was super nice, but didn't hire me. But what he did do was a few months later, he heard about another show that was looking for a writer's assistant. And he sent them his favorite people that he wasn't able to hire. And so this guy, who I met one time and just had a nice interview with, he put me up for a different writer's assistant job, which I did get.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I just think that's a good story for how these things can happen.
Yeah, and it just goes to show that even if you go out for a job and have an interview and you're like, oh, I'm not sure I love this show or I see myself writing in it, like take every interview because even if you don't get the job, you don't know where that interview will lead, and it's always good practice. At worst, it's good practice. At best, it leads to either the job you're applying for or interviewing for, or some other job, which is what happened to you, Erica.
It's kind of your job as someone trying to break in to be known by as many people as possible and to make good impressions on them. We've covered that before, but interviews for jobs is a really good way to do that because, like, I feel like I have seen people who, when they don't get a job, write something rude. You know, when they get the email that they didn't get it. And it's just like, well, you have burned down a bridge for no reason. It's really quite amazing.
Wow.
The more that you can go around town and see and be seen, you know, the more likely that people are going to think of you for various things. I also got a showrunner assistant job once because I interviewed for it and did not get it. And then they needed someone for like a summer special episode or something like that. And they liked me and the person they'd hired had moved on to other stuff. So you just never know.
I still can't get over the fact that people write rude things.
I mean.
No, but like this is career suicide, basically.
Yeah, they just don't know that, I guess, or don't care. It's a weird mentality that I can't quite understand.
Yeah, I'd say if you take nothing else, no other piece of advice from our podcast is just be nice to everyone and don't burn a single bridge. You never know. Unless someone's a total dick to you, then screw them. But
there are a couple bridges worth burning, but like they involve people with actual really poor behavior before you do that, and not just that they didn't hire you.
If someone didn't hire you, that's don't take it personally. There are so many reasons why you might not get a job, and it might have absolutely nothing to do with you or how you performed. There's so many factors outside of your control and outside of your realm of knowledge that go into hiring. So just do your best and move on.
I always think of Devil Wears Prada. I'm like obsessed with that movie. But I think it's like everyone keeps saying to her, especially like Stanley Tucci, like a million girls would die for this job, you know? Yeah. And she's like, that's the entertainment industry. I promise a million girls would die for this job, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, cool. Well, in terms of like the lower level support staff positions, how do you guys recommend that people get those jobs and make sure they're ready for them?
Well, I think that, again, I have not had those jobs, so I don't know if I'm really the greatest authority on this subject. However, I do have a lot of friends who have worked their way up through support staff jobs. And it seems that the common thread is just as Erica said, just to be nice. Be the best version of yourself that you can be. Know that you're there to serve the room, to be as helpful as you can. People will remember that. People will remember that you are diligent at your job.
And as far as, you know, how do you find out about these jobs? It's been a couple years since I've tried to get a lower level job, but there was a couple of things. I don't even know if this exists anymore, but there was like the UTA job list. That was a great like way you get on the UTA job list, which is just an email list. And hopefully you can find someone who knows how to get you on that list. And it's a newsletter that goes out and tells you about jobs, usually assistant jobs. There's Facebook. There's like all these TV writer groups on Facebook. And then also if you've taken any TV writing classes in LA, that's another great way to meet people. Again, please refer to our episode on networking, but where we have lots of tips for how to meet people. But I know that that's another way to meet people and then hear about jobs that are opening up is once you have a lot of friends that are at support staff level and they hear about an opening on another show, then they'll probably let you know. And then you can say, oh, can you put in a good word for me? So it's like always have a short bio of yourself ready of like what you're who you are, you know, again, refer to our
pitch yourself, episode, yeah.
Pitching yourselves also tells you how to, you know, concisely pitch yourself, but be ready to say, hey, I'm also, you know, this room opened up like a job on Simpsons opened up and I'm a comedy writer and I have worked for, you know, this other comedy room before as a writer's PA. I'd like to go out for this writer's assistant job and have your friend kind of maybe slip your resume into the showrunner's assistant or something on that show. That's usually how these kinds of things come up.
Hannah's totally right. Like, please see our networking episode because that's the best way to get these jobs. They're rarely ever listed on things. If they're on the UTA list, like you can go for it, but a lot of people get that list. And so then you need to have a really killer resume and cover letter and follow up if you can figure out if anyone in your network knows someone on the show or one of the producers or anything like that. Your alumni network can sometimes be helpful. If you went to a college that has a presence in the entertainment industry, look into whether there's an email list or something like that. Like I went to NYU. There's an NYU Tisch listserv and stuff like that that occasionally has these kinds of job listings. If you ever actually get one of these jobs and you're looking for your next one, the script coordinator listserv is super helpful. You know, like all you needed to do is get a job as I think a writer's assistant or even maybe a writer's PA or obviously a script coordinator and have someone recommend you for the list. That's probably the biggest source of these job listings that I see.
And then also like another important part of all this is staying up to date on the current state of the TV industry, like be reading the trades and be watching lots of TV. It sounds obvious, but I mean, even I am like, I don't feel like reading the trades this week. It just feels like homework. It feels tedious, but it's so important to stay on top of it so that when you get in that interview, you're able to talk about, you know, maybe the showrunner will just want to get to know you. They might not even ask you that much about your experience or qualifications, but well, what shows do you like? And you know, then you might find that you have a show in common, or you might love this particular writer or even a director of a TV show. And if you can kind of nerd out with a showrunner or whoever's interviewing you, that's a really good sign. That's a good way just to make a really good impression in an interview.
And speaking of the interview, like in terms of ways to kill it for a couple different positions, if you're interviewing for a writer's PA, talk about your expertise on like dietary restrictions and, you know, like your interest in food, because that's, you know, like also talk up your reliable car and how you're really great at finding parking. Like those are the things that are they want to hear for that job. You know, for writer's assistant, you want to talk about how fast you type and how well you're able to like keep organized in your mind in a fast paced environment, that kind of stuff. Like no understanding the job in the interview will go a long way. And also being really clear that you do have interest in being a writer, but you are there to learn. They want to know that you're interested and that you're, you know, enthused about the show, but like you really need to demonstrate a clear understanding that you are not being hired as a writer.
Yeah, you don't want to leave them with the impression that you're going to be bugging them to read your script every, you know, Friday afternoon or something.
Yes, so interview for this job and not the job that you wish you were interviewing for.
That also follows through when you actually have the job. Do not just, as soon as you make friends with certain writers, do not ask them to read your script. Wait until they offer. Always wait until they offer.
Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about with regards to support staff, or should we dive into when you're at staffing level?
I think let's talk about the gap in between. So you're doing your job as a writer assistant or whatever super well, but how do you get to that next point? How do you position yourself to be considered for a staff writing job?
Well, this did not happen to me, but from knowing people who have been writer's assistants or script coordinators and are hoping to get staffed on the show they're currently working on, the best way to do that is do an incredible job at your job. If you're a script coordinator, you know, always be proofreading and be distributing and doing everything on time, and basically just do your job extremely well and be willing to stay late, be willing to work those extra hours. Just prove that level of work ethic that you show as a support staff is what they can expect of you once you're a staff writer, so that they see, okay, you're a really hard worker and you're very good at your job and you're great in the room. You have great energy. You're the type of person we want. Now that final threshold, of course, is your writing. So as much as we've been telling you, don't shove your script at people and don't be talking about your scripts all the time, you're going to have your moment. And when the season is starting to wind down and you know that there's going to possibly be a couple positions open, maybe somebody might be moving on next season, regardless of what the changing situation is, you want to let the showrunner know that you love working on the show and you love being in the room, and you'll hope that they will consider you as a writer next season. And then if they seem open to that, and then they'll ask to read your script, make sure that your script is perfect and polished and ready to show that showrunner. So that means you've shown it to your writer's group, you've done a couple drafts, you've polished it, you've proofread it, you don't have a single typo in this thing. So that when they say, hey, okay, we're actually going to start reading for staffing, let's read your script. And that's kind of And then you're kind of leaving it up to fate. If they like your script and they think that you could write the show and you've done a really good job, then you have a good chance, but it's still not a guarantee.
And it may be out of the showrunner's control. It happens.
I will say, just want to add a couple things onto what all the amazing things Hannah just said. On the happy day, when the showrunner asks to see your script, you might want to consider what script you're going to hand over. So, for example, if you're working on a show like Marvelous Miss Maisel, but the script that is your most polished is basically like the next coming of The Sopranos, it's going to be a little bit difficult for the showrunner to reconcile the tone of the script that of your sample and the tone of the show. So if you are determined to get staffed on the show or even to get a writing credit as a writer's assistant or a script coordinator, because that can happen in a support level job if the showrunner is impressed enough with you that they ask to read your script and they give you a partial credit or a full credit for that season if there's a script open. Just make sure that whatever script you turn in is totally in line with what the show actually is.
Totally agree. If you are on the show, then I know it's hard to recommend writing a new sample to like a writer assistant who's busy all the time, but like assume that the showrunner wants this to happen to you, for you, right? Like that they're on your side and that they believe in promoting support staff, which a lot of showrunners do. They still have to get you by the network, you know, the other producers on the show. Like, so make their job easier by giving them a script that shows how you could write for this specific show, you know. And it's okay to give a cable sample to a broadcast show, but I wouldn't do the other way around. If your sample is broadcast and you're working on a cable show, it's going to be harder for them to get you hired. Jess is right. Tone is the most important element, but if there can be a couple more elements, like it's an ensemble piece and you work on an ensemble show and like there's elements of horror, and while yours is a horror comedy, it shows that you can write scary stuff. Like whatever those things are, just try to get it to match as much as possible. It doesn't need to match perfectly. It doesn't need to feel like the same show.
In fact, it shouldn't feel like the exact same show. You know,
don't write them a spec script of the show you're working on.
No, do not do that.
Legally, they cannot accept it.
I know how hard it is, having done this job, to write a script in your spare time while you're working full time as a writer's assistant on a show. It can be done. I've done it. It's the reason that I am where I am today, because I worked, you know, but, well, we talked about our hours and getting up at, I didn't get up at 4 a.m., but getting up at like 6 a.m. to write before work and get that script done that was like close in tone to the show that I was working on in a roundabout way helped me end up where I am today.
Well, I've been dying to ask you guys, I know you guys did fellowship programs, and that was kind of how you both landed in your first staff writer jobs. And I would love to kind of hear how that worked.
Every fellowship is different, but the CBS fellowship was mainly concerned with preparing the writer for all of the meetings they would have to take, preparing the writer to sell themselves in a meaningful way, basically to get you through the front door. And the other great thing that the CBS fellowship did was, after the end of the program, the two mentors of the program, the two directors of the program, they set about and tried to staff everyone who was in that year. And they do this with every class. My two wonderful mentors, they managed to get me onto a CW show called No Tomorrow. The process of getting on that show was an interesting one, because on one hand, obviously, as a writer, you're just grateful to get any job, at any time, any show. But there is, I don't know what Hannah's experience is on this, but there is a bit of a stigma coming out of those programs that you are the diversity hire, that you are not necessarily as qualified as a writer who's been hired by the more traditional way. And so that is something that I certainly had to deal with going into my first job.
Me too.
And like, I would get questions like, oh, you're the diversity hire. Oh, okay. And then a lot of times people would just sort of ignore you, or they would sort of discount my pitches.
That's so rude. I'm so mad.
So it was sort of like the responsibility fell on me to like work even harder to prove like, no, I do deserve to be in here. I'm not here to just fill your diversity quota. It is a double-edged sword in a way. You get the job, but at the same time, no one thinks you deserve it.
I do think about this a lot. It's kind of insane that there is that stigma of you don't deserve it as much, or you aren't as qualified. Not to blow ourselves up here, but like we beat out like a couple thousand other writers to get into that program and worked really, really hard to get into it. And then the program itself is extremely hard. So there is no like preferential treatment. If anything, you've been vetted and you've proven that you are just like a super hard worker and will do everything that it takes to get into a writer's room. And so we didn't have any special treatment or nepotism that like got us into that program. Whereas that can happen with writers who, you know, didn't work their way up, didn't start in a writer's room or didn't do a fellowship, but knew someone on the show in, you know, in like a mid-level or upper-level writer who helped them get a job on the show. So it seems a little unfair that there's this stigma of how somehow fellowship writers have gotten an unfair preferential treatment, when the reality is a lot of fellowship writers have actually worked even harder to get there than some of the other writers. So it's definitely unfair, but what Jess is speaking to too is that you then do have to work harder to prove that you belong there. And so it kind of goes a lot farther even than when you prove yourself and when you do like show that you belong there.
Yep. It falls upon you to prove yourself, but also it falls upon you to have thicker skin in a way. Like the remarks you get, the way that people treat you, you just have to have a lot of grace about it, which is you're here to further your career. You're here to prove everyone wrong. You're here to be the best writer you can and only move forward. Like I have a friend who came out of a similar diversity program. He made a joke to the writer's assistant, and this was a comedy room. And the writer's assistant laughed and said, "Oh my God, you actually are funny."
Oh no!
Wow.
And my friend was like, "Nope, I'm not going to react to it. I'm just going to let it like glide off my shoulders and continue my job. And that's what he did. And he is now, I think, in a producing level. And so it's just, again, it's not fair that you have to tolerate this sort of thing. But, well, actually, I want to open this up to you guys. So I know when my friend was coming up in the room, it was one of those things of, if I react to it, I will make everyone else uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's better not to react to it and to keep my head down and get to where I need to go. I feel like nowadays, the atmosphere in rooms is a bit more open. It's a bit more like, if you see something, say something. But I don't know how much of that is actually true and how much of that is just the lip service of the moment.
I'd love to think that it's gotten better. But I know from plenty of people that on certain shows it hasn't. You know, we keep seeing this CBS showrunner who ran three different shows. Turns out he's racist. We finally fired him. And he's like ruined the careers of so many people. Progress is being made. But like, I think you really have to make a judgment call over whether or not saying something will improve the situation or will make it worse. And I hate saying that, but it's true.
It's kind of like, it's like the same as, you know, when you're in elementary school, there's always going to be bullies and they're always going to find something. So whether it's the color of your skin or it's your gender or it's something, if there's a bully in the room, they'll find something about you and try to use that to tear you down. And the best thing you can do is rise above it and keep your head up. But it's also fair to stand up for yourself when you need to, because if you are unable to do your job well because somebody is just discriminating against you or picking on you and being inappropriate, it's not helpful to the room or to you as a writer. You deserve to be there. You belong there. So if someone's trying to tear you down, it's just not helpful. So like, say something to your boss.
I'm going to steer us back to how to get that job so that you can then face discriminatory situations.
Yeah, sorry. I totally drove us down a tangent.
A very necessary tangent. We haven't necessarily talked about pilot season yet. And, you know, what's pilot season? What's staffing season? Like, those are two incredibly relevant terms and time periods to know about.
Yeah. So staffing season, it's over the last couple of years as streaming has become more and more prominent. It's not really necessarily as much of just an all out mad rush to staffing season, which is generally like, I'd say March to June, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, March is a little early. June's a little late.
But yeah. Like, but that's kind of the far ends. It's really April and May is when it's really all happening. And that's for broadcast and network TV. Whereas, you know, streaming shows are kind of, and cable shows, they might be staffing in December. They might be staffing.
Yeah, they can staff anytime.
Yeah. So,
but basically, on the broadcast side, they order their pilots over the summer, usually summer kind of fallish. They make those pilots. And then once they've made all the pilots, they decide which pilots they're turning into shows. And once that announcement comes of which shows are being picked up, that's when those shows then need a writing staff. And that's when the big hiring happens. So it's good to be aware of that, to really know when to ramp up your connections and make sure that people are seeing you. So staffing season, they usually kind of work from the top down. So like, staff writers are usually the last writers hired. And then after that, support staff gets hired. So support staff starts filling out usually near the end of staffing season. That's been my experience.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that you're on the radar of any showrunners you know or anyone who you know is leaving. Come spring, you want to remind them you exist without making demands on their time, because they're going to be busier than ever trying to get their show off the ground.
I have definitely gotten a job offer like on a Tuesday and been expected to come into work on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For my current job, when I first got hired last year, I was interviewed at the end of February and I didn't hear that I was getting the job until the beginning of May, approximately 2 weeks before, which, you know, like you said, Jess, it could be you find out on Friday that they want you in the office on Monday. So be ready for anything. But you also might have to wait a long time to hear if you are a staff writer. They might want to meet early on that and just kind of see what's out there. But then it's going to take a while to hear anything because they got to hire those upper levels first.
There's something going on right now in the hiring world in which they say that it's incredibly difficult for white men, straight white men, to break into TV right now, right? And so because they notice that a lot of the staff writers' positions tend to go to diverse people, women, you know, people of color, etc. And they're like, oh, well, that means you can't break in as a white dude anymore. I just want to point out that we're talking about how all the upper level positions get hired first. So like what's happening over and over again a lot of times is that the white male showrunner will hire white male high levels and mid levels and then realize that he has a room without any diversity in it and fill that the, you know, those spots on the staff writer level. It's mostly myth, but like that's where it comes from.
Yes.
As far as I can tell.
Don't worry, white men. There's still jobs for you.
Yeah, you're still the majority.
You'll be just fine.
but yeah, and then a lot of times, again, this is like worst case scenarios, those white dude showrunners fire the staff level people that they got and bring in new diverse staff level people the next year.
Yeah, that happens quite often. So in these diversity fellowships, one of the great incentives for a lot of shows to hire out of these programs is because the diversity fellowships basically agree to cover that diversity writer's salary, either at the full rate or at a slightly reduced rate for the first season. And this basically just provides an incentive for the showrunner to be like, oh yeah, I'll hire this person because it's a free writer. But that incentive goes away after that first year. And so if the showrunner wants to keep that writer, that diverse writer, he or she has to pay out of the show's budget. And a lot of showrunners choose not to do that.
I feel like we've gone a little cynical in this episode, but
yes, we have.
But this is just, these are things that are true. So, you know, in terms of getting staffed as a writer on a show, your number one tool is your reps, if you have them, which, you know, we've talked about before. And it's kind of their job. If you identify the shows that you want to work on, and specifically that you have samples that you think could get you hired for those jobs, like make sure your reps know that. You know, make sure you do a lot of their work for them because they have a lot of clients and staffing season is super busy. But yeah, even like year-round staffing, if you see, oftentimes by the time a show gets announced in the trades, it already has a room. But if you hear about a show, really make sure that you communicate with your rep that I want on this show. This is the sample we should use. Please do whatever you can. And make sure that they know what your dream shows are so they know when to really bang down the doors, you know? Like if they ever make a Xena reboot, I want
you're gonna be
an
first
interview.
In line.
I will stand outside.
We're gonna have to fight.
Door.
We're gonna have to fight tooth and nail to compete for that job.
Oh, I don't want to go up against you, but I will get my chakra and I will go.
You know, maybe they'll hire two women. You know,
I don't know.
for a show with a female protagonist, maybe they'll hire two
it's
women
possible.
In the room. Yeah.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. but yeah, so like make sure that you're on the same page with anyone who you have on your team. And, you know, like here's I've never really had the classic showrunner meeting, you know, so like if you get a meeting with a showrunner who's considering you for staffing, that means they've read your script and they liked it enough to bring you in to meet with you, which means they also think that you could cover a need that they have on the show.
My showrunner meetings, my experience was they can run the gamut. Like you can get one where they literally just want to sit and talk to you and shoot the shit. And it's just about like, they might not ask you a single thing about your script or your writing because they've read your writing and they decided, all right, you're a good writer and you would fit, you know, your voice would fit on our show. What do you like as a person? What do you like? What are you going to be like in the writer's room? Do I want to spend 10 hours a day with you? And so they might just want to talk to you and get to know you. So be prepared for that. Or they might not have read your script, or they might have, they're busy people again. So maybe they had their assistant read your script and then give them the log line. So they might kind of grill you on what do you like to write and what shows are you watching, which is always a veiled question. What they really want to know is why are you drawn to a particular genre and why are you drawn to shows like ours? Would you be a good fit? Would your voice and the kinds of topics that you tend to write about, the themes and the characters that you tend to gravitate towards, does that fit the show that they are staffing? And then, like you said, Erica, they also want to, they have a need. The makeup of a writer's room is generally everybody's got different strengths and weaknesses. And so if they have a lot of writers in the room already that they know who are great with breaking story and great with structure, but they want to be a little more comedic this season and they want somebody who's got a comedy background, then talk about the comedy shows you've worked on and the comedy specs you've written and scripts you've written, maybe, and be funny, you know, like try to tell a funny story in your meeting. But yeah, what else, Jess? What am I forgetting?
You just have to be prepared for anything. And I guess my big note would be don't be afraid to be very, very enthusiastic about whatever show / script that you read / watched to get this meeting. Just you want the job, you want to show them that you really, really want the job. And so if you're enthusiastic about it, if they say like, oh, they really like my work, they really like what we're going to do here, they will be better inclined to take you on, I think.
I think also the thing to remember, and this is true for both staff writer interviews, but also for support staff, is that you spend so much time with the people in your room, like so much time, like you're going to get sick of each other. So you want, you know, like the showrunner, part of what the showrunner is doing is putting together a group of people that she can stand, you know, like that you're going to be okay with. And we're in Zoom rooms right now, which is a whole other story and maybe a whole other episode. But like, you know, like don't hire a writer's assistant that gets on your nerves. If you go to this interview and you get the sense that this room is going to be uncomfortable for you, or that the hours are just not going to work with your life, like it's a huge commitment to work in a writer's room at any level. And you really, if you can, want to be a little bit picky and try to find something that's the right fit so that you're not setting up yourself as well as everyone else for disappointment.
That's such a tricky thing. I think when you're starting out, you may not be able to like afford to be picky because you just really need that first job. And once you get that staff writer job, then you can afford to be a little bit like, you maybe didn't have such a great experience in that show. And so you want to look around and try to get a job on a different show next season. But I would say for your first job, and if you get an opportunity, say your reps want to put you up for a show that maybe you haven't seen, or you may not know if you're even a fan, I'd say take the meeting, because the worst thing that can happen is it doesn't seem like a good fit and you don't take the job or they don't hire you. But you never know. Like I had an interview for a show that is very, it's set in the world of fashion. And I am not only not fashionable, I just don't care about fashion at all. Everything I wear, I think I have style. I don't know. But I everything I buy is like vintage and like secondhand. I don't pay attention to like runway or any of that stuff. But I've heard that this showrunner is like really cool and really great to work for and really supportive. And so sometimes it's more about the experience and the people that you're going to be working with than it is the show itself. So I watched like every episode of the other show that that showrunner had worked on. I was totally prepared for the interview, and I wore my most fashionable red velvet boots to the interview, which the showrunner loved. And that was the first thing we talked about was my shoes. So, you know, I didn't end up getting the job. I don't know if I would have, because I got a different job before I heard back about that one. But I say take the meeting unless you've heard that like the showrunner is a horrible racist, then you don't want to work there.
I think that's a really good point, is really expand your horizon of what the right show for you is. Because, you know, like I think about Star Trek, you know, like I remember hearing that Star Trek scripts, maybe they still do this, like they would just write science, you know, they'd be like, the writers would just be like, whenever there was a, you know, oh no, engineering's on fire, we have to science, you know, like the transporter's broken, science, science, science. And like, so that the writers could really just, and they had, you know, they had obviously science consultants who could fill in what that is, but like, so that the writers were never actually, they didn't have to have an understanding of like particle physics to write on Star Trek. They needed to have the understanding of character and how to build that structure and stuff like that. So like, had Hannah gotten that fashion job, you know, maybe she could have written fashion. You know, like, right. Oh, I just got off the phone with fashion designer. Their new fashion is going to show up at fashion. You know, like.
Yep. And I never would have changed it. It would have just been fashion.
Well, that's why you have script coordinators.
Right. Exactly.
So there's one more thing I wanted to mention. If you are in the WGA, I feel like a lot of people don't necessarily know that there is a staffing portal. And I will couch this in, it needs a lot of work. People are not using it as much as they should. But the idea is so sound, I think it really will take off over time, which is like showrunners can list who they need for their show. You know, like we're looking for mid-level writers. We really need women. We really need Latinx writers. Like we really need these things. And they put it on there, and you can apply directly to a staffing job through the WJ portal. You do need to be a WGA member. So this is specifically for those people to make them aware. But I think that's really cool. And I hope it broadens and becomes more public over time.
Yeah. And then one last thing to add, we didn't talk about pilot season much. That is like before staffing season. That's like in, I don't know, winter of every year. Pilot scripts are going out and pilots are being shot, and those pilots might not get picked up, but it's really great as a staff writer or any writer trying to get a new job on a new show, maybe where they were on a show and it's gotten canceled or it hasn't been picked up yet. If you're looking for a job, start reading all the pilot scripts and get a sense of which ones you like and which ones might you might be right for. I didn't need a job before this year for Legacies. I knew that we were coming back, but I still read some pilots just as practice and just to see what else was out there. And there was one that was very similar in tone and in the premise to another script that I had. So if I had decided to go out for that job, it would have been like, oh, good thing that I'm aware that this project exists, because if I hear about a staffing job on this show, I can say, oh, I read that script and I'm already ready to like talk about the subject matter and my similar script to that one. So definitely be reading all the pilots and just be knowing who's got a pilot, which showrunners are going to be possibly staffing that season. That's all like really important.
There you go. If you guys have any questions about getting your first job as support staff or as a staff writer, I hope you will hit us up on Twitter. Our handle is Untitled Female. You can also reach us at untitledfemaledrivenpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to reach out with anything you'd like to hear us talk about. We hope to hear from you soon, and we'll be back with a new episode shortly. So thanks, and have a great day.